Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff. 10:34 is the time. In our Ideas Matter segment, we take time just about every week to check in with the state humanities councils in our seven-state region. Today, we're talking with Maria Tatar, professor of Germanic languages and literatures at Harvard University. She's written and translated several books on fairy tales, and she describes how seemingly simple stories like Little Red Riding Hood and Beauty and the Beast challenge us to think a little harder as we try to decode the cultural contradictions in them. Maria Tatar, welcome to the Roundtable.
Great to be with you.
What a fascinating line of work you are in.
I completely agree, and I just can't get enough of it. I love talking about storytelling and this great instinct that we have to, you know, endow our lives with some kind of meaning or make sense of things.
You know, I'm still in a 13-year period of reading these stories to my little ones, and it amazes me the transformation some of these stories have taken. Not 2 weeks ago, I read what I presume to be a fairly early version of Hansel and Gretel. I got to tell you, it's terrifying.
It sure is. They're the two children have to face this witch in the woods who seems to be generous, but is in fact fattening them up for a feast. And they know it. It slowly dawns on them that they're going to have to use their wits to get out of this terrible situation.
Where did stories like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast originate?
You know, it's sometimes hard to wrap our minds around the fact that these stories were really for adults. They are part of an oral storytelling culture. You can go back, think of an era without electronic entertainments. There's nothing to do at night but work, spin, sew, mend tools. Storytelling was told often to the rhythms of labor. It kept things light and enlivened the evenings. And just like our entertainments for adults today, they were full of sex and violence. They had an emotional ferocity that wasn't always appropriate for children. I think children were around, and a lot of the stuff went over their heads. But children grew into these stories rather than, you know, the stories were not told for them. Gradually, these tales moved into the nursery and enter the brothers, the brothers Grimm, who put them between the covers of a book and clean them up.
Yeah, and cleaning them up would be a key for kids. Now, one I read two nights ago, and I was fascinated by, first of all, the sort of the moral, which wasn't much of a moral at all, was Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Now, in the story that I read, which is, I think, fairly recent, Goldilocks gets off scot-free. She runs away, and then the bears decide they will lock their house when they leave the next time. And so how does society telling these stories change the outcome and basically the story itself?
Oh, yeah, sometimes we twist these stories into pretzel-like shapes to try to get a moral out of them for children. But in fact, Goldilocks, like Jack of Beanstalk fame, lies, cheats, and steals.
Yeah.
And I think many of these stories are teaching children survival skills. How do you manage to get out of the worst possible situation you could ever imagine? That witch who is going to cook you, or the giant who is planning to eat you up the next day, or those bears, which are not very friendly. We sort of make them more friendly today, especially in the versions told to younger children. But these were stories that had not a single one-liner, not a message or a moral, but they basically taught you about how you can find your way in the world and manage to get back home or to find a new home that is going to be better than the one that you just left.
You know, in this day and age, you wonder why stories like Little Red Riding Hood continue to be told. Every little kid knows it still.
It's an extraordinary story, and you can take it back to the whole question of the predator-prey relationship. It's also about innocence and seduction. It's about a beast and a human being. What happens in that encounter in the woods when you're all alone in the woods? One of our earliest versions of Little Red Riding Hood has a girl who's not saved by a hunter. What she manages to do is to trick the wolf. She does get into bed with the wolf. It quickly dawns on her that it's not Granny. And what does she do? But she tells the wolf that she has to go outdoors to relieve herself. And she insists on going outdoors, even when he says, oh, you can do it in the bed. And she gets out and she runs back home. So she is in the mode of the trickster figure. She quickly figures out how she's going to get out of this worst-case scenario.
We're talking today with Maria Tatar, professor of Germanic languages and literatures at Harvard University. So I assume you have thought about this. What do you think about the various Disney versions of the fairy tales?
Well, there's a great upside to Disney in that Disney Studios kept the stories alive. And they had a wonderful creative team for, say, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 1937. They made a movie that is exquisite in aesthetic terms. Walt Disney himself wanted to create a great work of art. And, you know, many say that Disney sentimentalizes and sweetens, creates these saccharine versions. But remember that Wicked Queen. I remember watching this charismatic, evil stepmother down in the cellar with her dusty tomes and her chemistry set. She's a great source of fascination. So there's lots of scary stuff in there. I'm not so fond of that moment at the wishing well when Snow White is singing in this terrible voice, this overly sweet voice about how her prince will come someday. But Disney did keep the stories alive. And, of course, you know, we see how Disney has actually evolved so that the most recent Disney film, Frozen, is inspired by the Snow Queen. But the great thing about that was that the makers of the film realized that they did not have to stay close to the 19th century script. They could make up their own version of the story, and one that is relevant for our culture today and also has our values. Now, you can also talk about the downside to Disney, and, you know, there is the whole merchandising issue. We create all of these commodities. The great thing about the fairy tale in times past was that people created something out of nothing, out of mere words. They told stories. These were stories that enabled them to pass on wisdom, to bond with each other, to create community, to talk about their values. And they didn't need a product attached to it. And so I think, you know, inevitably that has happened to the fairy tale, and that is something to worry about.
Do you ever wonder why there are so many evil stepmothers in these stories?
I sure do, especially since I was reading the stories to my children when they were young. And I remember coming across the juniper tree, which has many horrible incidents in it, but in the end, the stepmother is killed when her stepson, who's been transformed into a bird, drops a millstone on her.
Ouch.
It crashes down on her head. And I think that one of the things about fairy tales that is so extraordinary is that they stage our ambivalence. They put our complicated feelings into plots. So often we do have a good dead mother and then an evil scheming stepmother. Yeah. Bruno Bettelheim, who wrote about the uses of enchantment some decades ago, reminded us that it is important for children to have stories that enact all of their complicated emotions, because they can't talk about how they feel. But somehow having a story, it can be therapeutic and help them to work out some of their feelings, some of those toxic feelings that they have about parents who are always controlling them and setting boundaries and limiting their freedom.
Well, I got to say, you have one of the coolest jobs I've come across in a long time. You must have some splendid nightmares on occasion. Maria Tatar, thanks for being here. The Vermont Humanities Fall Conference, Why Do Stories Matter, will take place November 13th through 14th at the Dudley Davis Center at the University of Vermont, and Maria will participate. Thanks again for being here with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.